55th chapter is not completed. Not started, correct. So this thread is Krishna's marriages. Now it all begins with Rukmini's marriage, with Krishna marries Rukmini first. After that, next episode is Satyabhama, marriage with Satyabhama, and the whole Samantakamani episode is there. After that, Krishna marries five other princesses. After that, Krishna marries 16,000 princesses who were kidnapped by Narakasur. So this whole line is going on now. Now, we just discussed Rukmini's marriage. So in this context, Rukmini's son Pradyumna's history is also spoken. So one may see that the pastimes that are mentioned here may not be very strictly chronological, because chronologically describing the unlimited pastimes that Krishna has done in Dwaraka or Mathura is not very practical in 7 days. So he is discussing episodes. So Rukmini episode is done like that. Now this is a very small chapter, 55th chapter. It's a purely storyline. Pradyumna is the son of Rukmini. So he is an expansion of Vasudeva. He is also called Kamadeva or Cupid. So once he was kidnapped by, when he was a small boy only, baby only, he was kidnapped by a demon named Shambhara. And later this, how the reunion between Rukmini, Krishna and Pradyumna happened after this kidnap by Shambhara. So Shambhara takes this boy and then drops in the water, ocean, and the fish just swallows this boy. And the fisherman of that same fellow catches this fish and cut the fish, and inside that he finds this boy. So like that's a very nice story, small story. We can read the translations. Read the translations of first verse onwards.
Sukhdev Goswami said, Kamdev, Cupid, an expansion of Vasudev, had previously been burned to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now to obtain a new body, he merged back into the body of Lord Vasudev. He took birth in the womb of Vaidarbhi from the seed of Lord Krishna and received the name Pradyumna. In no respect was he inferior to his father. The demon Shambhara, who could assume any form he desired, kidnapped the infant before he was even 10 days old. Understanding Pradyumna to be his enemy, Shambhara threw him into the sea and then returned home. A powerful fish swallowed Pradyumna, and this fish, along with others, was caught in a huge net and seized by fishermen. The fishermen presented that extraordinary fish to Shambhara, who had his cooks bring it to the kitchen, where they began cutting it up with a butcher's knife. Seeing a male child in the belly of the fish, the cooks gave the infant to Mayavati, who was astonished. Narad Muni then appeared and explained to her everything about the child's birth and his entering the fish's abdomen. Mayavati was, in fact, Cupid's renowned wife, Rati. While waiting for her husband to obtain a new body, his previous one having been burnt up, she had been assigned by Shambhara to prepare vegetables and rice. Mayavati understood that this infant was actually Kamadeva, and thus she began to feel love for him.
This Mayavati was Rati, Cupid's wife, in her previous life. So when Shiva burned Cupid to ashes, Mayavati was in search for her husband, and she was waiting. Somehow she was kept in Shambhara's palace, but she was not touched by him. So like that. Then this Pradyumna, who was Kamadev, who again born from Rukmini as Pradyumna, he was caught in that fish body. And now Rati, or in her new attire called Mayavati, sees Pradyumna as a small boy. She immediately recognizes, he's my husband. So Pradyumna rises, grows up there only. Then after he's grown up, Mayavati starts revealing her conjugal, wife relationship with Pradyumna. And then Pradyumna says, what is this? I have been seeing you since my childhood and I was in a different mood so far. So what is this behavior that you are exhibiting now? Then Mayavati says, actually you were Kamadev and I was Rati. We were together. It's our relationship is like not just within one lifetime, it's like continuing. So then she understands. Then later there was a big fight. How Shambhara is killed, we'll see. Next.
After a short time, this son of Krishna, Pradyumna, attained his full youth. He enchanted all women who gazed upon him. My dear king, with a bashful smile and raised eyebrows, Mayavati exhibited various gestures of conjugal attraction as she lovingly approached her husband, whose eyes were broad like the petals of a lotus, whose arms were very long, and who was the most beautiful of men. Lord Pradyumna told her, "O mother, your attitude has changed. You are overstepping the proper feelings of a mother and behaving like a lover." Rati said, "You are the son of Lord Narayan and were kidnapped from your parents' home by Sambhara. I, Rati, am your legitimate wife, O master, because you are Cupid. That demon Sambhara threw you in the sea when you were not even 10 days old and a fish swallowed you. Then in this very place we recovered you from the fish's abdomen, O master. Now kill this dreadful Sambhara, formidable enemy. Although he knows hundreds of magic spells, you can defeat him with bewildering magic and other techniques. Your poor mother, having lost her son, cries for you like a kurari bird. She is overwhelmed with love for her child, just like a cow that has lost its calf." Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Speaking thus, Mayavati gave to the great soul Pradyumna the mystic knowledge called Mahamaya, which vanquishes all other deluding spells." Pradyumna approached Sambhara and called him to a battle, hurling intolerable insults at him to foment a conflict. Offended by these harsh words, Sambhara became as agitated as a kicked snake. He came out, club in hand, his eyes red with rage. Sambhara whirled his club swiftly about and then hurled it at the wise Pradyumna, producing a sound as sharp as thunder crack. As Sambhara's club came flying toward him, Lord Pradyumna knocked it away with his own. Then, O king, Pradyumna angrily threw his club at the enemy. Resorting to the black magic of the Daityas taught to him by Maya Danav, Sambhara suddenly appeared in the sky and released a downpour of weapons upon Krishna's son. Harassed by this rain of weapons, Lord Rukmaniya
means son of Rukmini.
The greatly powerful warrior made use of the mystic science called Mahamaya, which was created from the mode of goodness and which could defeat all other mystic power.
He was using sattvic weapons while Shambhara was using some rajasic and tamasic weapons.
The demon then unleashed hundreds of mystic weapons belonging to the Guhyakas, Gandharvas, Pishas, Uragas and Rakshasas, but Lord Karshni, Pradyumna, struck them all down. Drawing his sharp-edged sword, Pradyumna forcefully cut off Sambhara's head, complete with red mustache, helmet and earrings. As a resonance of the higher planets showered Pradyumna with flowers and chanted his prayers, his wife appeared in the sky and transported him through the heavens back to the city of Dwaraka. O king, Lord Pradyumna and his wife resembled a cloud accompanied by lightning as they descended from the sky into the inner quarters of Krishna's most excellent palace, which were crowded with lovely women. The women of the palace thought he was Lord Krishna when they saw his dark blue complexion, the color of a rain cloud, his yellow sail garments, his long arms and red-tinged eyes, his charming lotus face adorned with a pleasing smile, his fine ornaments and his thick, curly blue hair, thus the women became bashful and hid themselves here and there. Gradually, from the slight differences between his appearance and Krishna's, the ladies realized he was not the Lord. Delighted and astonished, they approached Pradyumna and his consort, who was a jewel among women. Seeing Pradyumna, sweet-voiced, dark-eyed Rukmini remembered her lost son and her breast became moist out of affection. Srimati Rukmini Devi said, "Who is this lotus-eyed jewel among men? What man's son is he? And what woman carried him in her womb? And who is this woman he has taken as his wife? If my lost son was kidnapped from the maternity room, were still alive somewhere, he would be the same age and appearance as this young man. But how is that this young man so much resembles my own Lord, Krishna, the welder of Saranga, in his bodily form and his limbs, in his gait, and the tone of his voice and his smiling glance? Yes, he must be the same child I bore in my womb, since I feel great affection for him and my left arm is quivering." As Queen Rukmini conjectured in this way, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, arrived on the scene with Vasudev and Devaki. Although Lord Janardhan knew perfectly well what had transpired, he remained silent. The sage Narada, however, explained everything, beginning with Sambara's kidnapping of the child. When the women of Lord Krishna's palace heard this most amazing account, they joyfully greeted Pradyumna, who had been lost for many years, but who had now returned as if from the dead. Devaki, Vasudev, Krishna, Balaram, and all the women of the palace, especially Queen Rukmini, embraced the young couple and rejoiced. Hearing that lost Pradyumna had come home, the residents of Dwarka declared, "Ah, providence has allowed this child to return as if from death." It is not astonishing that the palace women, who should have felt maternal affection for Pradyumna, privately felt ecstatic attraction for him as if he were their own lord. After all, the son exactly resembled his father. Indeed, Pradyumna was a perfect reflection of the beauty of Lord Krishna, the shelter of the goddess of fortune, and appeared before his eyes as Cupid himself. Since even those on the level of his mother felt conjugal attraction for him, then what to speak of how other women felt when they saw him?
So this is a small episode where Krishna's son Pradyumna, what all he went through. There was separation between Pradyumna and his parents right from his birth, and after his marriage again he came back. So the storyline is clear and simple. A demon kidnapped him, his name is Sambara, and a fish swallowed him, and he was found in that fish's womb, and Rati helped him grow and revealed to him who was he, and then he killed Sambara and he came back to Dwarka. So one point that is often misunderstood by modern people is that when Pradyumna came to the palace of Dwarka, even Krishna's queens also were little bewildered and felt attraction towards Pradyumna because of two reasons. Number one, he's exactly resembling Krishna. He's as good as Krishna in his bodily features and his beauty and all that. Secondly, he was Cupid personified. So when Cupid is there, generally there's an attraction. But Rukmini did not feel so. Rukmini was wondering, how come this Pradyumna is so much resembling my son, my husband? So he must be my son. Maybe if my son was alive somewhere, he would be of the same age as this boy, young man. So like that. Then Narada Muni came and told the whole story. So the circumstantial or the spontaneous attraction that the queens felt for Pradyumna should not be misunderstood in a different way and should not be misinterpreted in offensive ways as the modern crowd may do. So it's like a momentary attraction because of the resemblance of Pradyumna's form and Krishna's form. And as because he was Cupid, that was only within the momentarily it's there in the eyesight, nothing else was there, right? So that is about Rukmini. After Rukmini's marriage, Rukmini's son is also explained. Now next marriage is marriage with Satyabhama. So along with the Satyabhama's marriage, we have the whole story of Shamantaka jewel, 56th chapter. Shamantaka jewel story everybody knows, and it's a very instructive story. There are so many beautiful insights and lessons that we can learn. This beautiful pastime can give us so many messages. So one prominent message is offense towards Supreme Lord. This Satrajit, he was so attached to a material object and he offended even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of our attachment to material things, we may offend even Krishna many times. We may misunderstand him, we may not follow his instructions. So those things are very prominent in materialistic people. So Satrajit's character is revealing that kind of attitude of a conditioned soul who is rebellious towards Krishna, who may even point out Krishna, find fault with Krishna because of his material attachments. So we'll see now. Sri Sukha Uvacha Satrajitah Svatanayam Krishnaya Kritakilbhishaham Shyamantakena Manina Swayam Udyam Yadattavan.
Sukadeva Goswami said, having offended Lord Krishna, Satrajit tried as best he could to atone by presenting him with his daughter and the Shyamantaka jewel.
So having offended Krishna, Satrajit tried to atone. So he tried to come out of this offense, but still the offense was quite grave. It's not a small offense. So because Satrajit had spread false rumors, bad propaganda about Krishna, blaspheming Krishna and spreading false rumors about Krishna is like very offensive. This could apply to other devotees also. Some senior devotees may be there. If someone neophyte person spreads false rumors about Guru or senior Vaishnavas or the Supreme Personality of Godhead without knowing the facts, then this kind of reaction will certainly come. Satrajit was murdered directly. So he was rewarded by a demigod, Surya. So rewards of the demigods cannot counteract offense to Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rewards of demigods may inspire one to offend the Supreme Lord, but they will not protect one from offending Supreme Lord. You see, Satrajit was inspired or became offensive towards Krishna because of his pride of obtaining a demigod's favor. So in front of demigod's favor, Krishna's blessing and Krishna's favor could not stand in front of Satrajit. He did not give much importance to Krishna's advice. So that's why Shyamantaka Mani's glories are also mentioned nicely, that wherever that money is there, it will protect everyone and there will be nice peace and prosperity in that place. That kind of benediction was there. Shyamantaka Mani as an object, it has that. So the object which ordinarily and potentially can protect someone became the cause of the death of Satrajit because of his offense to Krishna. Right? So there are so many beautiful blessings and facilities and resources that we may have. But all those things can definitely facilitate our devotional service. However, that depends on one's attitude. If one is having an offensive attitude towards Krishna, that same facility, that same opportunity to perform devotional service could become a big obstacle in our devotional service. Right? So one needs to have the discrimination and intelligence and maturity and humility to utilize everything that he has in Krishna's service and not for sense gratification. And while utilizing those objects in Krishna's service, it could be skills or resources or manpower or power, position or prestige or influence, whatever it may be. While utilizing that in Krishna's service, if one gets attached to it, then he will certainly become detached from that object, means forcefully detached from that object, and he will also get the reaction of offending Krishna. That's the typical example of Satrajit. So, actually Krishna comes in various incarnations in this material world as a child in human society. Now he comes as Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, all these avatars. We can certainly learn a lot of lessons from their activities, and we can also worship them, offer prayers to them. But when Krishna descends as Krishna in the human society and performs so many activities like this, we have a better opportunity to relate with him. We can relate with him better because whatever situations are described here, they happen in our day-to-day basis, regular basis, in our interactions with other devotees and other people in this world. So the opportunity to relate with Krishna's activities is more than his other incarnations also, right? So he's appearing as a human being. Varahadeva's activities, he's fighting with Hiranyaksha in Garbhodaka Ocean. You don't face such kind of situation, right? Do you fight with someone in some ocean? Right? It's little. Definitely, it's a wonderful episode, but it's not as easy to relate with as the kind of misunderstandings that Krishna is facing through. Satrajit misunderstood Krishna. He said, "You are a thief." So that kind of situation can arise very easily in everyone's life in this world while he's interacting with other people. Sometimes you are not at fault. Someone will say that you are at fault. It's a sheer misunderstanding. So how Krishna dealt with it? We need to see. So it's more relevant and more instructive, Krishna's pastimes. In this pastime, Krishna shows how he was blamed twice. By whom? His own Dwarakavasis. Satrajit was a Dwarakavasi. And striking point you can note down here is, Satrajit was a Dhamvasi. He was staying in Dwaraka. But whom he was worshipping? Sun God. So while being in Dham, in Krishna's abode, in Krishna's personal presence, someone is worshipping a demigod for material benedictions and getting attached to that material benediction. So, someone may stay in the temple, in the abode of Radha Krishna, Gaur Nitai, Jagannath Baldev Subhudra, Ram Lakshman Sita Janaki, whatever. Someone may be staying in the abode of temple, abode of the Supreme Lord. But still, one may have material attachments. One may take shelter of someone else other than spiritual master and his senior authorities for fulfilling his own desires. One may not study the philosophy of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Chaitanya Charitamrita, but he may adopt the philosophy of some modern counselors or modern, what is that called, philosophers. What are they? Different people give tips for success, this and that, right? What are they called? Professional self-help gurus. That's a very good word. Philosophers, self-help gurus, that kind of people. Philanthropist. Like that. So, the philosophy spoken by these people may seem more appealing to a practitioner of devotional service who is supposed to be more aligned with the scriptures of Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? This seems too lofty. Let's speak something else. Practical. What is practical? What this self-help guru fellow is saying. Right? Yeah, there are some good things. You should always pick up good things from everywhere. But not at the cost of neglecting our core stuff. Right? You can definitely take some achar. Right? If it is healthy and tasty, if it's bona fide, if there is no onion, garlic in it. Right? Certainly you can touch it, but it cannot be replacement for chapati, sabji, dal, rice and your core thing. This is our chapati, sabji, dal, rice. Right? So, being a dhamvasi, satrajit is worshipping sun god, a demigod, for material benediction. Because he is playing a role in Krishna's pastimes, he is the father of Krishna's wife, Satyabhama. Certainly, we have no right to criticize him, no right to blaspheme him. But we need to learn a lot what not to do in our devotional service from him. Right? Different characters in Bhagavatam give different kinds of lessons through their behavior, through their good behavior and through their misbehavior. So, when there is good behavior exhibited by a character in Bhagavatam, we should learn what to do and glorify him. There is bad behavior exhibited by a character of Bhagavatam, we should learn what not to do and not blaspheme him. There is a thin line. You cannot criticize these personalities, but you should learn what not to do from their character. So this is applicable in all episodes. I also mentioned several times in your earlier classes. It could be Shiva, it could be Brahma, it could be Yayati, Pururava, Chitraketu. So many personalities. Bharat Maharaj. So all these great people are there. They must have done some mistakes, but we should not offend them. Certainly Satrajit, I'm not sure whether he's on the level of many other great devotees who might have done some mistakes here and there. But still, it's safe not to offend anyone. Especially when his story is mentioned in Bhagavatam. So, this consciousness of Satrajit of worshipping a demigod within staying in the dham, in the personal presence of Krishna, reveals a very important message to us that consciousness is more important than residence. One may think that I am staying in the temple, I am much superior to all these people staying outside. Who knows? Within the temple, what is one's consciousness? While staying in the metropolitan city, traveling in local trains or other places, they are still trying to maintain their consciousness, chanting Hare Krishna. In fact, that is a more challenging situation to practice Krishna consciousness. Still they are doing it. And one should think, the temple resident should humbly think that I have so much favorable ambience here, still I am spacing out. They must get better than me. If that kind of humble attitude is there, he will be able to respect them. Right? If one starts thinking proud about one's situation, I am in a better situation. These people are... He is chanting in local train, Baba. What kind of chanting will happen? I am chanting in the temple. One might say like that. Yeah, you can empathize with them. You can appreciate them and encourage them. But one should not feel proud. One should not minimize their position who are trying to do it. So what is more important from Krishna's perspective is not where you are staying. Not what is your residence. What is more important for him? What is your consciousness wherever you are? Satrajit was in dham, but his consciousness is that of dedication to demigod, attachment to a material object, offense towards Krishna, three things. worshipping someone else other than Krishna. Second, offending Krishna. Third, undue attachment to material object. So these three things he has. So we see that Ayodhya Vasis are there. So Ayodhya Vasis, they loved Krishna so much, but there is one Ayodhya Vasi, that washerman, he criticized Lord Ram. And Dwarka Vasis, now Satrajit, criticized Krishna. So being in Dham doesn't ensure that you are the most exalted personality in the cosmic manifestation. Same thing with being in a temple or being in an ashram or being in a bungalow, a great city, connected to a great personality or great organization, doesn't ensure that one is great. Right? So Rukmini was in Vidarbha. She is called Vaidarbhi because she is coming from Vidarbha. But she is Krishna conscious, staying in Vidarbha. But Rukmini was which conscious? Jarasandha conscious. Right? He is a dedicated servant of Jarasandha. Rukmini, Shishupal and all these people are like, they are all one party. Jarasandha is their Mahajan. And staying in such association, Rukmini was so Krishna conscious, we have seen earlier. Sritvan, Gunan, Bhuvana Sundara, Trinvatante. And what about Sita Devi? Sita Devi was staying where? She was staying in Ravana's place for 1 year. But she is so Ram conscious. And Manthara, she was staying in Ayodhya only. But she was so against the interests of Lord Ram and Dasarath Maharaj. Pandavas and Kauravas, they were staying in the same city, Hastinapur. What is Pandavas consciousness? What is Kauravas consciousness? Dhritarashtra and Vidura, they were staying in the same palace. Every day interacting with each other. What is the difference between their consciousness? So, one needs to come out of these externals. One should focus more on one's consciousness and attitude than these externals, which are definitely important in one sense, but they are not all in all. They are not ultimate. Similarly, one should not judge devotees based on what they are doing, where they are staying, whom they are interacting with, what kind of service they are engaged in. So one should not be. So all these are facilities to enhance one's devotional service, but one should not give primary importance to those externals. All said and done, that doesn't minimize the potency of Dham. Dham has its potency. Now we said that consciousness is more important than your residential place, Dham. But Dham itself also has potency, but that potency is accessible to a person to the extent his attitude is proper. Temple has potency, Dham has potency, ashram has potency, but that potency is accessible to a resident of that place to the extent he is having proper attitude, proper consciousness. Right. Mere entry into a Dham will not make us devotees or demons or whatever. It all depends on one's attitude and consciousness. That's why whenever we go for Dham Yatra with His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, the initial couple of sessions and especially the first session, he dedicates to create the mood. When we go to Vrindavan, he speaks about, see, there are so many open Suez canals here, there are pigs there, it may not look very clean, and the kunds are filled with that green layer, malai. Right, they may not look clean, but one should, to the external vision, the Dham may not appear very exciting and clean. But this is the potency of Dham. This is the place where Krishna has performed various leelas. And Prabhupada Maharaj sets the perspective in which we need to see. That prepares the full mood. So, every now and then we come to the same conclusion, that we have to hear Krishna Katha. to keep our attitude and consciousness proper regularly. And how often should we hear? Regularly, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, hearing and studying. Then only one will be able to maintain a proper consciousness. Otherwise, although one stays in the dham without that contact with spiritual sound vibration, there is sufficient scope to get deviated from that. That's what Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning here. Having offended Krishna, Satrajit tried to atone and do whatever. So having offended Krishna, that's how he began. Satrajit, Sukadeva Goswami was not very much approving Satrajit's action. He begins Shamantakamani's episode with Satrajit's offense to Krishna. Right in the first verse he says, Satrajitaha svatanayam krishnaya krita kilbushaha shamantakena manina swayam udyamya dattavan. Right, so he was trying to atone for whatever mistake he has done. Kilbushaha is offense. Okay. Next. Sri Rajovacha. Satrajitaha kimakarod Brahman Krishnasya kilbishaham Shamantakaha kutastasyam Kasmadatta sutahare.
Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O Brahmana, what did King Satrajit do to offend Lord Krishna? Where did he get the Shamantak jewel? And why did he give his daughter to the Supreme Lord?
So Parikshit was little surprised. Satrajit offended Krishna. He was staying in Dwaraka. What was the background? We are saying something very astonishing. So Parikshit was very eager to know about details. So his eagerness helps us understand the inauspicious effects of offense to the Supreme Lord. Sukadeva Goswami is responding. Asit Satrajitaha Suryo Bhaktasya Paramasakha Pritastasmai Manim Pradat Sachatushtaha Shamantakam.
Sukadeva Goswami said, Surya, the sun god, felt great affection for his devotee Satrajit. Acting as his greatest friend, the demigod gave him the jewel called Shamantak as a token of his satisfaction.
Satrajit was a great devotee of sun god. And he gradually entered into a deep friendship. Sakhyam, sakha, friendship with sun god. Okay. So sun treated his devotee as friend. He came from Dasyarasa to Sakhyarasa with sun god. So we will not recite verses. Is okay? Read the translation. It is storyline.
Wearing the jewel on his neck, Satrajit entered Dwarika. He shone as brightly as the sun itself, O king, and thus he went unrecognized because of the jewel's effulgence. As the people looked at Satrajit from a distance, his brilliance blinded them. They presumed he was the sun god, Surya, and went to tell Lord Krishna, who was at the time playing at dice.
Prabhupada writes that he was playing chess. Prabhupada. We need to also sometimes refer to Krishna book, because many of the purports in these chapters are very small, because Prabhupada's disciples felt that Prabhupada has already given full translation, commentary of 10th canto, so we will not elaborate so much. So they will elaborate so much in the 11th canto. You will find 3 pages, 4 pages, 5 pages, 10 pages purports. In the 11th canto itself is philosophical, on top of it purports will become too elaborate. Nimi Navayagendra Samvad and Uddhava Gita. Out of 31 chapters, 23 plus 5, 28 chapters are highly philosophical. Only 3 chapters you will find some pastime. So be ready for 11th canto. If you are not doing group study now, you will be forced to, oblige it to, inspire it to do study, self group study. Because you can't survive in 11th canto alone. You need Sangha. Okay. Now Satrajit is wearing that Samantaka mani in his neck. He was effulgent as sun. He was just coming inside. People thought that he's sun. And sixth verse, all the residents went to Dwaraka. They said Narayana, Dwaraka and they met Krishna. Narayana namastestu Shankha Chakra Gadadhara Damodara Ravindaksha Govinda Yadunandana. We offer obeisances to you, my dear Krishna. You are holder of Shankha Chakra Gada and Padma. You are lotus eyed Damodara. You are Govinda. You are descendant of Yadu. So, sun has come to see you. Seventh verse, they say that Lord Savita is sun god, Arka. He has come to see you, O Lord of the universe. He is blinding everyone's eyes with his intensely effulgent rays. So, now Krishna is saying that why the sun wants to see me? I am a insignificant mortal. I am a human being. Why a demigod, great demigod like sun god wants to see me? Now they say, the most exalted demigods in the three worlds are certainly anxious to seek you out, O my dear Lord. Now that you have hidden yourself amongst the Yadu dynasty, thus the unborn sun god has come to see you here. So, don't minimize your position or glory by saying that I am an insignificant human being, mortal, why sun has to see me? Even great, great demigods and universal controllers also can come and see you because you are the Supreme Lord. Like that, some Dwarakavasis came and reported to Krishna. So, sometimes this happens. Although someone is the associate of the Lord, they will see something insignificant which is not worth glorifying, worth giving attention to, and then they glorify it little beyond necessity. So even Dwarakavasis are also here misunderstanding or overestimating someone based on his material opulence, skills. So externally someone may exhibit so much skill and opulence and power and influence, but one should not unnecessarily misunderstand or overestimate him beyond the necessity. That's what Dwarakavasis are doing now. Because the conditioned soul has this weakness to get carried away by a small exhibition of power, opulence. Typical materialistic people, they will see some yogi, some baba just manufacturing one gold coin. Or just, he does like this and then removes one shivalinga. Or he does something like this and then some vibhuti falls down. Ash. Ash will fall down. So people get mesmerized. Wow, who is this fellow? Who is this great personality? I take shelter of him. I surrender unto him. I put all my life, body, mind and words and soul, everything dedicated to him. Like that they say. So the conditioned soul has a tendency to get astonished by a small exhibition of opulence or power or strength. So now Dwarakavasis are also misunderstanding or overestimating the position of Satrajit, considering him sun god, and they are getting overexcited, although they have some understanding of Krishna's position. The substance in any person should be in his devotion to Krishna and his faith and service to Guru. Then he will become great. Yasya deve parabhaktar yatha deve tatha guru. Tasyate katita hirta prakashante hyanam mahatmanah. So, if one has implicit faith in Krishna and Guru, such a person is worth appreciating and glorifying, and he is great. Certainly he is great. So, what does that reveal? One's real glory is not actually in one's skill set, in one's accomplishments, in one's talents and powers and opulences. These are all good, fine. We can always engage them in Krishna's service. But that is not one's real substance. The real substance in a devotee is how much he is devoted to Krishna. how much he is able to remember Krishna, how much eager he is when a service opportunity comes in front of him. What is his service attitude? So this is more important than external skills, right? So skills are skills and talents and resources and manpower and charisma, and all these things are just there to kind of help or facilitate or support service of Krishna as accompaniments. But that is not the main thing. What Krishna wants is bhakti. How much bhakti this person has. So, in fact, in the ultimate sense, no material skill or facility can make a person great. Satrajit is apparently shining like sun, but he is not sun god. And sun god is actually engaged in Krishna's service. Vivaswan is a great devotee. But Satrajit is not like that. He is averse to Krishna's service. A demigod may be a devoted servant of Krishna, but a devotee of demigod may not be servant of Krishna. Generally, devotees of demigods are attached to material benedictions. So, one should not be befooled or bewildered by someone's exhibition of material skills. Okay, we can appreciate him if he is engaging those skills in Krishna's service, but if one fails to engage them in Krishna's service, one should not be overly or unduly appreciate him or glorify him or see him as a very big person. Who is big? One who is rendering service to Krishna. Although he is just lifting cow dung in the Goshala and he is not known to anyone beyond that Goshala campus, he is more important in Krishna's eyes and supposed to be more important in devotee's eyes than a person who is so charismatic and he is popular all over the world for his material accomplishments. Right? Certainly without Krishna's sanction, no one can become so opulent and all. To that extent, one can say, okay, he is great. But association should be with this person only, who is serving in Goshala as Krishna's devotee. Getting right? When Nawab Hussain Shah came inside Sanatan Goswami's quarters, all the great pandits and Bhagavatam reciters and Brahmanas, they stood up, seeing Nawab Hussain Shah. That means, without Krishna's sanction, a person cannot sit in the position of a king, a ruler. Nawab Hussain Shah definitely got the sanction of Krishna to sit in that position. So for that position, he was respected. When a celebrity comes here, when Chief Minister, Prime Minister or MLA or whatever, when they come here, definitely we should give them all respect. Right? We cannot ridicule them. You cannot disrespect them. You are not a devotee. Tilakke darayapka. So one should not say like that. Ganti mala bhi nahi. Kya bhai? Aniyum bhi khata hai. Machli bhi khata hai. You eat non-veg also. What kind of person you are? He is in certain position. You should give due respect to that person for what he is. Dehanata jata jata. Yet, one's association should be at heart. One should be giving more importance to a devotee, sincere devotee, for his devotion. Ninth verse
only, right? Yes. Sukadeva Goswami is continuing.
Now, Dwarakavasis accepted Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, as is explained in the 6th verse very clearly. So, Dwarakavasis concluded by addressing Krishna as the Supreme Master of the whole universe. So, now, when they reported to Krishna like that, what did Krishna say? That we will see now in the 9th verse. Hearing those innocent words, the lotus-eyed Krishna smiled broadly and said, "This is not sun god. You are innocently thinking that he is sun god. He is Satrajit, who is glowing because of the jewel that he received." And in the next 2 verses, the power of Shamantakamani is very nicely explained. Read the translation.
tenth translation.
King Satrajit entered his opulent home, festively executing auspicious rituals. He had qualified Brahmanas installed the Shamantaka jewel in the house temple room.
So Satrajit is wearing the Shamantaka jewel, which is so auspicious, and he kept in his house's temple room, right? And every day this gem would give 8 bharas of gold. And what is bhara is mentioned in the purport actually. Since there are about 37,000 grains of rice in an ounce, the Shamantaka jewel is producing approximately 170 pounds of gold every day. 170 pounds of gold, that is its capacity. So the piece, my dear Prabhu, and the piece in which it was, place in which it was kept and properly worshipped would be free of all calamities such as famine or untimely death. Note this point. Wherever Shamantaka Mani is there, calamities such as famine and untimely death will not attack that place. And also of evils like snake bites, mental and physical disorders, and the presence of deceitful persons also will not have much influence. That is the power of Shamantaka jewel. Okay. But the opposite of whatever is mentioned here would happen in this episode. Because, as I said, the object may be potent, the place may be potent, but to access that potency, one should have the right attitude. One should deal with those objects or persons or places with the right attitude. To that extent, he can derive benefit. So inside the room, there is treasure. But you need to open that room. To open that room, you need a key. And even if you have the key in your hand, you should be able to insert it properly. If you turn it upside down and then try to insert it and it's not going, and then you are bewildered, then it's difficult. So treasure is right there. It's just a wall is separating you, the door is separating you. But you should know how to unlock the door. You should have the key and you should know how to unlock the door. Like that. So Satrajit came with the Shamantaka jewel, but he did not come to see Krishna. He was so overwhelmed to receive the Shamantaka jewel. So he is worshipping that material thing. So materialist means one who is concerned with gratification of the senses within the material world and not try to utilize it in Krishna's service. Right? He did not come to see Krishna at all. He has become so proud of his wealth. Read that.
On one occasion, Lord Krishna requested Satrajit to give the jewel to Yadu King Ugrasen, but Satrajit was so greedy that he refused. He gave no thought to the seriousness of the offense he committed by denying the Lord's request.
So, when Krishna told him, actually what was the rationale of Krishna, why Krishna has to say that? He is attached to his material object, let me not bother him. So Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, he said that this, the amount of wealth that this jewel is producing is not supposed to be with one person. Right? So, that's why Krishna told him, requested him, that give it to the king. Because now, if in one village or in one house, all the rain of the monsoon comes, can he handle it? Can one house handle it? Can one household utilize it? Definitely rain is required for everyone. However, if the same amount of rain falls on a mountain, what will happen? All the mountain will become fresh, and waterfalls and rivers will flow from the mountains, and it will flow and then come to the lands, and then that is absorbed by the lands or just held by the lands, so that many people can nicely take it. Right? So a person can, within a house, a person can have a well for his household water needs.
But within a house, he cannot have the ocean. I need water. Kitna pani chahiye? You just need one private well. In traditional houses, there used to be wells. You know well, right? So you just put some bucket inside and then pull with your hand and then take water. You have that experience in villages? Yeah, that kind of setup is okay. And in some smaller villages, there is one well for the entire community. For, you know, several, four, five streets, there is one big well. Some government will just open it. And then all the families will come and there are multiple, what is that called? I don't know what is that called in English. That the wheels they put, right? Pulley, correct. They put pulleys and then multiple people will come and draw water and then take it. You can see in Galtari also some people do that. So that is fine. But if you want to keep the ocean or the entire river, Vaitarini, Mera Pichai, you go for taking bath in Vaitarini river, there are so many small huts there. If one hut fellow claims that this entire river is mine only, it's like too much, right? He cannot handle it. He will drown only in that. So, the amount of gold that this Shamantaka jewel can produce is unimaginably high. Daily 170 pounds of gold. Itna kharcha hai ka, itna expenditure hai. There is not much expenditure for one household. How much he will eat? Now you can, you have so much money means you just cook. And entire kitchen is filled with foodstuffs. Right? Now, how much you can eat? You may cook, say, I have so much money, I have so much grain, I will cook 100 kilos of grain every day. 100 kilos of rice. How much you can eat? 100 grams only you can eat. Maybe 200 grams, half kilo, 1 kilo you eat. But 99 kilos, what you will do? It's too much for one person to handle, one family to handle. So what you can do? Just do food for life. In 10 minutes that whole thing will be finished. Mahaprasad distribution will happen. One person may take so much and then keep inside his locker. But how much he will eat? He may eat, next 4 or 5 days he may eat. But he cannot store a quota that can come for 1 month. And after 1 week, it is spoiled and then that goes waste. Right? So one should not accumulate more than his necessity. That's what Krishna is trying to teach. Because some people will accuse Krishna in this regard also. It is Satrajit only performed devotional service to sun god. It is his own property. Why Krishna has to eye on that fellow? Why Krishna has to ask Satrajit to give that Shamantaka to Ugrasena? Unnecessary. This is unnecessary intervention on Krishna's side. And that's why Satrajit kind of blamed Krishna that you must have stolen it when it was actually stolen by a lion after killing Prasenajit. So what is wrong on Satrajit's part if he misunderstood Krishna? Because Krishna gave him sufficient clues to misunderstand. Someone will argue like this. But what was Krishna's intention? He's saying, you cannot handle it. I'm speaking to you not in the position of a king or king's representative, not in an official way, but as a well-wisher, as a genuine well-wisher, I am giving you this advice that this much wealth is not supposed to be in one person's possession. If it is in the king's possession, all the wealth that is being produced by this object can be utilized by all the citizens, and a king can do it because his operations are more. Right? So, you need to distribute that wealth. So that was the reason for Krishna's request. And also, the best of everything should be offered to the ruling chief of the country. So Satrajit just rejected the request, ignored Krishna's request. So by not offering the jewel to Krishna, or the king, and trying to enjoy it himself, that object which has the power to remove any kinds of misfortune has become the cause of his misfortune, Satrajit's misfortune. One may seem to be very innocent and behaving very justly and aptly. After all, it is his possession. He earned it. his hard and labor, his samantakamani, he did not steal from anywhere, he did not loot from anywhere. It is a bona fide possession, or it came to Satrajit in a very bona fide way. He worshipped genuinely sun god, and sun god, out of his friendship and affection for his devotee, he gifted it. Krishna's going and asking him is not very appropriate. That's what some people might say. But you need to see the truth from a higher perspective. One cannot have such kind of narrow-minded understanding of things. So, one, because of attachments, one is overwhelmed by this kind of narrow-minded facts. Right? One may become very narrow-minded. He will see the truth within a box only. This much only is the truth. Actually, that is truth. Satrajit, that belongs to him only. And Krishna should not have asked for it. So, in one sense, from a smaller, in a narrow-minded perspective, what Satrajit feels is okay. But you need to see broader picture. What is the reason why Krishna has requested him? Many times we fail to see that. When we are being dealt with by other people or senior people in a different way, I think, why are you keeping it with yourself only? Share it with others also. One may say, this is mine, Prabhu. You have not given this to me. He has not given this to me. Why I should share with others? Yeah. You may sound completely logical from your perspective. But from a higher perspective, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's what we see. Because of our selfish attachments to our material objects, we may fail to share our resources, our possessions, our time, our energy for Krishna's service. Satrajit had samantakamani, you may not have samantakamani, but you have 24 hours of time in your hand. Is it not? And you also have, what else in your hands? You have some laptops, some books, some gadgets, whatever it is, space, some locker space, right, whatever. So somebody may be rendering some seva in certain area. He reporting to someone, and someone else asked him, can you do this small favor to me? Yeah, there are some official protocols, but if it doesn't take much of his effort, why can't he just go and help him? Why he has to stick to some official boundaries? Does it make sense? Logically, he's true. Officially, I'm supposed to serve here only in this time. I don't have to do it. But you can go one step ahead. Certainly, if there is no risk in that, there is no breach of etiquette and protocols in that, certainly you can spare your additional time or energy or resources with someone else who is in need and earn his gratitude and earn his blessing. That is very good for your spiritual advancement also. Right? Someone needs to see from a higher perspective. One should not have narrow-minded thoughts. Logically, what Satrajit is feeling makes sense. But that logic has a limited application. One needs to see a broader perspective in terms of sharing manpower, sharing resources, and sharing time. Time is the most valuable thing that a brahmachari has. You don't have any other valuable things. Right? At the max, you may have the most costly phone. Nothing beyond that. You don't have anything. Nowadays, the phones are more prominent positions. People are attached to phones more than anything else. At the max, that's the only thing you have. But if you are personally unable to utilize it to the highest extent, and someone else needs it at that point, why can't you just share it? The other day, my tablet gave some problem. It's not getting charged. It went to coma. Right? Abhi to coma se bahar aaya nahi. It's not getting charged. Whether the cable is problem or charger is problem or the tablet itself is problem, I don't know. Rasik Gaudari Prabhu is the doctor of all these tablets. So he only purchased it also for me. So I asked him. He said, I was just about to go to Kanpur last Monday. Last Monday I was there doing your Ashtagoshti, right? During Ashtagoshti I was telling him, Prabhu, do the needful. Only you can revive it. Just bring it to consciousness. So I can't carry so many books. I had Dhruva Maharaj episode, for that 2 volumes I need to carry. And I had Jambudvipa, one more. So 3 Bhagavatam books I can't carry. I'll just carry 1 tablet with my notes. So So he immediately said, like, it takes some time to revive it. You take mine. He just gave it his tablet to me. So I went and did it. And day before yesterday I came back and returned it to him. So, I mean, it's a spontaneous help that a devotee offered when I needed it. In these 4 days, he's not needing it. I don't need it. I need it most. Needed the most. He understood the need and shared the resources. Simple, done. Right? It's mine. I cannot give. If he had said it, then he's 100% perfectly logically correct. And I don't have to. I have no reason to blame him at all. But beyond the official boundaries and protocols and rules and policies and other things, if one can just go one step ahead, one step beyond and serve someone, seeing a bigger picture, then it's glorious. He will earn the blessings and he will earn the gratitude of other people. Satrajit failed to do it because of his attachment. If he had used little common sense, what will I do with 170 pounds of gold that is coming to me every single day? Every single day, 170 pounds of gold. Can he spend so much? His treasure house will be full. And his whole house will be full after a few days. And after 1 month, his whole courtyard will be full. And after some time, he has to purchase more palaces. Kitna? Daily 170 pounds, physical. How much? He'll occupy whole Dwarka or what? Right? But he's ready for it. He's ready for it. See, the more, when you have a resource with you, it's not that you will just get enjoyment from it. It's not that you will just get happiness from it. You will also have the headache of maintaining it. You purchase one laptop, one iPad, one iPhone, and one, what is that called, iMac, itna bada screen, and a TV, and this and that. Your time has to be distributed to all these gadgets. Is it not? You go to some wealthy houses, they will have in the drawing room, they have a big screen TV. In the bedroom, they have a small screen TV, and they have a VCR, and they also have a laptop, they have a tablet, they have iPhone. But aankh to do hi hai. So he has only two eyes, and he keeps on just expanding everywhere. If I am here, then I will use this. If I am there, I will use that. You come out and then sit in the room only, na? Sit in the drawing room only. Why do you need additional thing in bedroom? So people are so attached to comforts, although they don't have the ability to utilize all those comforts. Satrajit did not have the ability to utilize so much of gold. Right? He has no plan. He has no plan. How can someone plan? I'll plan this. Now you do festival services, and for some service you need, say, 5 volunteers. Juice making, Hari Gopal Prabhu coordinates. Right? You need 5 people for juice making. If it's a bigger Abhishek, you may need 10 people. Now Abhishek preparation, you may need 4 people or maybe 8 people if it's a bigger Abhishek. So you just put 20 volunteers there. What they will do? They'll just space out. Backup room will be crowded. Is it not? And there will be confusion and chaos during the Abhishek. And kitchen will be crowded in the juice making place. Right? Unnecessary manpower floating around. But the other team, the guest department or vehicle department, they are desperate for manpower. You need to allocate people in a more judicious way. Is it not? Same thing. Satrajit is failing to understand it. But technically speaking, why I should spare my men to you? But when you don't have need, why can't you spare? Satar is one person cannot enjoy. This fellow has only one daughter. It's not that he has one big family like Krishna has. Krishna has 16,108 queens, and each of them had 10 boys and one girl. So Satar did not have that much family. He has only one daughter. How much dowry he will give to that daughter? Right? I am doing it for my daughter, Sagar. So now, if one acts against Krishna, it is the source of all distress. So Satrajit is doing like this. 13th verse. One Satrajit's brother Prasena, having hung the brilliant jewel about his neck, mounted a horse and went hunting in the forest. This is simply making a show of one's material opulence. This fellow is just hanging samantaka. When you are going outside, you can wear so many other ornaments. And that samantaka jewel itself is giving 170 pounds of gold. You can make some ornament and put it hanging around your neck. Why do you have to wear samantaka jewel itself while going for hunting? It unnecessarily attracts the attention of other people. This is a typical showing of mentality. I have this much opulence, I have these many accomplishments, I have these many resources. People keep on boasting left, right, center, some people. So, one should not unnecessarily boast or show off what he has. If what he has is only material, mundane possession, and if he shows off, he will only inspire envy in the hearts of other materialistic people. A small child, he is given a new toy. You know, small girls will play with these dolls, Barbie dolls. That pink dress and then pink, everything like very ornamented. They play with that Barbie dolls. And small boys, they play with these cars and guns and pistols and other things. So the boy or girl, they would get a new toy. And immediately the tendency is not there just to enjoy that toy, but to go out and show with his or her other friends and then show off, I got a new toy. And what will happen? Other boys or other children will become little attracted to the toy and then they will try to, they will ask him, please share, I will also play with this toy for some time. And she will say, no, I will not give, this mine. Then the boys will say, no, give. Then after that, after some time, they may plan and scheme to kind of break that toy or kind of give some galleys to that toy. Hey, it's not as cute as my toy. See, my toy, although it is old, it is very wonderful. It is so cute. It is still strong. Your toy is so delicate. This may break at any point. Like that, they may kind of discourage this child. And the child will quarrel. And then, mera chai. Like that, they will fight. Parents have to come and solve these issues. So, at the level of small children, the dispute seems childish. But elderly people are also undergoing the same thing, same experience. They want to show off what they have. I got this iPhone 6 or 7, what is going on now? 5, 6, 7, Jobie. And then some people will say, I got 10, 11, 12. Right? Which is better? They keep on comparing. I will upgrade my system. And they will create e-waste. And they will, 70,000, they purchase this mobile and then they will sell it for 30,000 and they will put more thing and then purchase something more and this is taken by someone else. So like that, unnecessary, that just giving market to the fellows, the companies, right? So, exhibition of one's material opulence will inspire envy in others. Simple. Same thing happened with Kritadyuti, she was showing undue affection, so much affection to the newborn child, and Chitraketu is giving more attention to that child only, and Kritadyuti, and other wives got neglected, and they poisoned the child, and the child died. Okay, next, a lion killed Prasenajit.
A lion killed Prasena and his horse and took the jewel. But when the lion entered a mountain cave, he was killed by Jamavan, who wanted the jewel.
Next.
Within the cave, Jamavan let his young son have the Shamantak jewel as a toy to play with. Meanwhile, Satrajit, not seeing his brother return, became deeply troubled. He said, Krishna probably killed my brother, who went to the forest wearing the jewel on his neck. The general populace heard this accusation and began whispering in it one another's ears.
So, Jambavan finally got the Samantaka jewel. He killed the lion and then he got it. So, Prasenajit wore it and went to the forest for hunting. And Prasenajit and his horse was killed by a lion. And lion was killed by Jambavan. And Jambavan gave it to his boy to play. So, no one knows the whereabouts. And what is this fellow doing? Satrajit. He thought that Krishna earlier asked for it. Maybe he must have taken it. Prachandadi did not come back to my house.
Right.
So, the general populace also heard this accusation and began whispering it. So, general populace means not that every single citizen of Dwaraka is doing it. Other people who are of similar nature as Satrajit. When you share gossip with others, na, just notice very clearly, not everyone will respond in a similar way to that gossip sharing. Some people will entertain it, they will ask more questions, they will show lot of enthusiasm and relish it, and then try to go deeper into the subject matter and analyze more, and they will also share, oh yes, yes, they will just aggravate it and then they will try to just chew that. Some people are expert in trying to highlight some positive side of other people, and when you are sharing a gossip with about one person, other person will try to control your gossiping tendency. In my personal circles, association, I found Gaur Sharan Prabhu, you know, he's in New York now. He had this knack of controlling. Whenever I was just expressing some frustration about some person and all, he very gently and intelligently will divert my attention towards the good side of that person or some other topic. Right? So some people are like that. They cannot entertain gossip. They cannot entertain fault finding of someone else. They will just try slowly bring you to a positive side. That just helped. That just helped people. But here when Satrajit was spreading rumors, hardly anyone has any clue what happened to the Samantakamani. Satrajit is purely speculating. Based on his pure speculation and imagination, he said that Krishna must have stolen it. He has no basis for this accusation or fault finding. There is no fault, but still he is attributing a fault forcefully on Krishna. And some people are supporting it. They are whispering about it. So people of similar nature only will do it. So it's an opulence to have someone who can control us when we are overwhelmed with some negativity. Definitely we cannot just see positive everywhere. Vishvam purna sukhayate. That vision is very difficult to attain overnight. Certainly we are hurt by some people. We tend to see the shortcomings of other people. Sometimes the lower nature or shortcomings of someone will just come as a brunt, and you have to deal with it also. Right? And it's a fact also sometimes. Here Satrajit is completely wrong. Krishna is totally innocent. But in our regular interactions, we are not completely innocent, and we are not dealing with people who are completely innocent also. There is fault. There is shortcoming. There is certainly a tendency to see the shortcoming, and we have to deal with the shortcomings of some person also. And there is also a need to express how you are getting affected because of someone else's mistake. A human being feels that need. After all, he needs that emotional support. But it's an opulence to have an association of devotees who can very empathetically listen to you, how you are affected, and bring you to a positive side, not push you to the negative side. Yes, you are troubled, we understand that. But think about this way, think about that way. Ultimately, we need to be in a situation where we do not have any grudges or very deeply negative impressions or thoughts about other devotees at the time of death. If I die with having some negative impressions or thoughts or attitude towards one devotee, will Krishna accept me? That should be the question in our mind. Does it make sense? Now, this devotee may be like this, and he may be troubling me also, or someone else may be like this, because of his interaction, maybe some. But if you just go little deeper,
what he will see? After all, he is also a devotee. He has certain shortcoming that is maybe troubling you. But you have certain shortcoming that is troubling other people also in a different flavor. Because nobody is perfect, is it not? Not many are perfect. That may be a better statement. You can't say nobody. There may be so many perfect devotees here. So we need to deal with the negativity, because nobody is as innocent as Krishna. When Satrajit is accusing Krishna, Krishna is completely innocent, he has nothing to do with the matter only. But when someone accuses you, it's not that you are completely innocent. There is some fire, that's why smoke is coming. Right? So one needs to acknowledge the presence of that small fire. It may not be forest fire, it may be little fire, that's why smoke is coming. So let's try to address it and try to mitigate it, pour some water on it, done. Right? So one should not... Ultimately, one should make sure that I should not get into having any negative impressions or deeply negative thoughts and grudges towards other devotees at least. Right? It's very detrimental to one's chanting, one's service, one's study of Bhagavatam. To the extent one is non-envious, to that extent he can understand Bhagavatam. Simple. Nirmatsaranam satam vidyam. If you want to understand Bhagavatam, try not to have envy towards anyone. Not possible overnight. It may take some time. Try to minimize the envy in the heart. Try to minimize the hatred in someone, hatred towards someone else. Then one can understand Bhagavatam. So that envy is fanned, the spark of envy is fanned more and more as we are overwhelmed with someone else's negativity. Try to neglect it. Move forward. Try to overlook it. Don't overlook it. Overlook it. You see, overlook means? You are seeing, but question of inapashyati is actual meaning of overlooking. But many times, instead of overlooking, we overlook it. Jada deklede. That creates problem. Right? So here this Satrajit, he is just misunderstanding Krishna. Kya position change karte rahte? Okay, fine. No problem. Next, when Krishna heard this rumor, what he was trying to do, he wanted to remove the stain on his reputation. This is another important principle. When Srivas Thakur was who is that fellow? Gopal Chapal. Gopal Chapal, right? He only kept some Kali Puja paraphernalia in front of Srivas Thakur's house. And he tried to prove to other people, the local community, that Srivas Thakur was doing some Shakta worship in the night. What's the problem with Shakta worship? Because in that culture, Vaishnava society, Shakta worship is not considered very big thing. But now he's doing some worship, great. That is the Kali Yuga perspective. But in those days, in that community, Shakta worship is not considered very good. And someone is looked down, like, yeah, Shakta worship, it should be Vaishnava, like that. So he tried to prove that he is doing some Shakta worship. What did Srivas Thakur do? He came out and said, he called people, ajo, ajo. From this street, this house, that house, all of you come see, what am I doing? This is what I do in the night. He supported the plan of Gopal Chapal. Although he is not at fault, he said that I am at fault. I have done that mistake. He voluntarily agreed for it. We cannot even think about it even in our dreams. When someone is attributing fault on you, even if you are actually at fault, the tendency is, I am not at fault. The false ego does not allow us to be honest. We, Kali Yuga typical conditioned souls, do not have the courage to be honest about their faults, about their shortcomings. That's the typical ambience, and the ether is surcharged with dishonesty in Kali Yuga. One lacks the ability to admit one's fault. I am at fault, I have certain shortcoming. That requires a lot of courage to admit.
Kaliyuga people do not have that. What to speak of accepting that I have this fault, despite not having that fault? That's what Srivast Thakur is exhibiting. We cannot imitate him at all. But at least, one should honestly admit that I am at fault when one is actually at fault. However, that is more practical and more expected. When someone is attributing a fault on you, all when you are not at fault, how to deal with it? If you have the devotional strength and inner stability like Srivast Thakur, you can say, you can call people and then say, I'm actually at fault. See. You can advertise your fault. If that much is not there, one can be say, theek hai yaar, bolne do. Well, my life will not change. I will continue. That is second. That is just detached. Third, you should make an honest attempt to prove that you are not at fault. You prove him wrong. You prove that not out of malice towards him. You just say that, you just give a clarification to him. You are accusing me unnecessarily. You are saying that I have done this mistake. Actually, I have not done this mistake. This is the proof. Especially when someone is a leader, someone is having some followers and he has to lead some people, it's his responsibility to have a goodwill. It is his responsibility to ensure that people do not misunderstand me. So, now Krishna is trying to prove that I am not at fault. And Srivast Thakur is claiming that yes, I am at fault, although he is not at fault. Who is higher? Whose attitude is greater? According to the situation, both are correct. Sometimes you may say that yes, I am at fault. Sometimes you may just keep quiet and then let them speak whatever they want and then I will do my thing. Third thing, you have to actually go and prove that I am not at fault. That is a necessity of the hour. You can't be detached. That will create unnecessary confusion. Especially, you are in a managerial role or a leadership role. Because your words and actions and decisions will be taken seriously by people only when they trust you. Only when they have faith on you. If that faith is at stake, one should invest his time and energy to rebuild that faith. Krishna is blamed unnecessarily. He is trying to remove that black stain on his reputation. It's necessary. Why Mahaprabhu is 100 times saying that I will not see Prataparudra Maharaj. I cannot see him. Shuklavastre Masi Bindu. He says, it should. If a sannyasi meets a vishayi, that will be seen like a black spot on white cloth. It is very prominently visible. And what will people do? People will zoom in with their cameras, with their high 24 megapixel cameras they just bring in there. See, this is the spot. They'll upload on YouTube. They'll put on Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, that will go viral. If some popular person has done some mistake, grave mistake, people will highlight it, right? The modern tendency is by propaganda you popularize a negative news, right? Something genuine is going on, you are not bothered so much, but when something wrong happens, you should advertise it so much. Why the prominent content of newspapers and most sensational content of newspaper is negativity only, generally. So and so mishap is there, someone else is mistreated, someone has done this, someone has done that. The prominent thing is negativity in most newspapers. And there is a big analysis also, who is holding all these newspapers and who are the heads of all these, why they are, the tone of the paper is in this way, in predominantly negative. There is a different analysis, different people are doing it. we don't know much about it. But thing is, Kali Yuga tendency is to propagate bad news more. But in a Vedic civilization, in a cultured society, when something bad is there, that has to be kind of mellowed down, and that should not be discussed so much. That's what Vidura was doing. Vidura, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked, why are you, what all places did you visit? What is the welfare of Yadus? He asked like that. Then Vidura spoke everything except the annihilation of Yadu dynasty. And next Narada Muni came and met the Pandavas. Same thing, Narada Muni also did not reveal the news. Because a bad news will reach a person according to the circumstances whenever he deserves to listen about it, whenever he deserves to know about it. Why should I unnecessarily make a propaganda out of it and spread it if it is negative news? So that should be the attitude of a person in Vedic civilization, ideal civilization. But to aggravate bad news is the attitude, the cheap attitude of especially Kali Yuga people. So that's what is happening in Satrajit's case, right? But Krishna immediately wanted to clarify this and remove the stain on his reputation. So it is needed. So when one is accused, a leader may defend to prove his innocence, because people will not listen to him. Because a sannyasi or a person in the renounced order or a leader's only asset is his reputation. If that reputation is at stake, then nobody will take him seriously. Then how can he lead? Right? And he is not leading, such people are not leading not just to exercise their authority, but they lead only to serve the people. Otherwise someone else, some other leader will come. Nowadays that reputation is also not very big thing. People may go 10 times in the jail also, still they stand in elections also. Right? And movie celebrities, they may have hundreds of cases against them also. Still, when they speak some great dialogues about Desha Bhakti, Samaja Bhakti and truth and dharma, etc. in their movies, people will just whistle and then they put some garlands around him. The same hero, he will drink. He will smoke in one movie. In the next movie, he will act like a bhakta. Right? People will say, "Arey, wow, kya bhakti? Kya natakya?" Natakya, sir. Only drama that's happening. So people, Kali Yuga people, although a person is ill-reputed also, Kali Yuga people are so foolish that they will take him seriously. Right? Like that. Because they give me sense gratification. The constant hunt of a Kali Yuga person is for sense gratification. Even if that sense gratification is given by an ill-reputed person, I will take it, no problem. I am looking for that now. Now, a good person is there, he has done a small mistake, and there is a lot of propaganda about that small mistake. Still, people will access it. Why? For sense gratification. They are not actually bothered whether something good happens about him or bad happens about him. This gossip is giving me sense gratification, some kick, some time pass, right? So I will accept it, I will embrace it, I will relish it, I will chew it. Punaha punaha chedvita charvananam, I karunga. That is sense gratification. Kali Yuga people, they don't know how to gratify senses also, right?
Next. In the forest they found Prasena and his horse. Krishna took some Dwaraka citizens with him and went to retrace Prasena's path. Right? So in the forest they found Prasena and his horse both killed by a lion. Further on they found a lion dead in a mountain side, slain by a raksha without any weapon. Jambavan actually has killed it. Then the Lord stationed his subjects outside the terrifying pitch dark cave of the king of the bears, and then he entered the cave alone. Krishna entered the cave. Krishna saw that the most precious of jewels had been made into child's plaything. They don't know what this money is all about. Determined to take it away, Krishna approached the child. Then what happened? The child's nurse cried in fear upon seeing that extraordinary person standing before them. Jambavan, strongest of the strong, heard her cries and angrily ran towards the Lord. So the child didn't see even Krishna's intention to take away the jewel. She just saw a stranger in the cave. They are not used to other people just visiting the caves. Hi Jambavan, hello, how are you? People don't just visit him. He's not he is staying in a solitary cave. Suddenly a stranger came. She was little shocked. She would have been more shocked that Krishna came to take it away. Right. And actually she was not very much afraid, but it was the natural effect of first time seeing Krishna. She became very ecstatic. In such ecstasy, she kind of made a cry. So Jambavan came, what's happening? What is this ecstasy? He just came out. Savai Bhagavata Tenam Yudhe Swaminatmanaha Purusham Prakritam Matva Kupito Nanubhavavit.
Unaware of his true position and thinking him an ordinary man, Jambavan angrily began fighting with the Supreme Lord, his master.
So, Savai Bhagavata Tena, although that Supreme, the person who entered the cave is Bhagavata, directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still Yudhe Swaminatmanaha. So, he tried to fight with that Swami. Master. He is my master, but still I will do yuddha with him. That was the attitude of Jambavan as soon as he saw Krishna. Purusham prakritam matva. Although he is the supreme purusha, he took him as prakritam, mundane. And kupito na anubhavavit. He became very angry, na anubhavavit. Because Jambavan was not aware of the position of this Krishna in that context. So that made him try to fight with Krishna ignorantly. However, from here you can definitely get a message that if someone forgets or fails to understand his actual position in relation with Krishna, even though he sees Krishna, he cannot worship him or accept him like that. This all happens because of ignorance. But Jambavan's position is not the ignorance of any ordinary conditioned soul. Jambavan's ignorance of Krishna's position, or not coming in the actual knowledge of Krishna's position immediately, is inspired by Krishna's energy. Why? Because Krishna wanted to fight with him. And Jambavan wanted to fight with Krishna. In Ramavatar, Ram asked Jambavan, what is your desire? You have done so much service. He says that I want to fight with you. And Ram said, I am Maryada Purushottam. How can I fight with you? If I fight with my own devotee, it doesn't look good. Ram is attached to reputation. But Krishna is not attached like that. He is in a different way. Both are transcendental in a different way. So, but Lord Ram said, definitely I will fight with you, but not now, later. Then Krishna said, Krishna came to give that fighting opportunity to Jambavan now in this context. If Jambavan directly recognizes, then there is no mood of fighting. With an unknown person, with a stranger, you can fight with your full vigor. But if you have even the slightest understanding of how he is connected to you, immediately some kind of bias or some love or affection will invoke in that person. Even if I lose this fight, after all, he is my man. You cannot put your full this thing. Is it not? So, that ignorance, maintaining that ignorance or lack of awareness is necessary for fight. For fight to happen with sufficient excitement. So Krishna had to do that. And why Krishna fought with him? Krishna fought with Jarasandha. Krishna fought with
all these demons in Vrindavan, Shakatasur, Vratra, Vatsasur, Bakasur, Aghasur, Putana, Vyomasur, Keshi, Arishtasur, and after coming out of Vrindavan, he fought with Chanura, Mushtika, Shala, Toshala, Kuta, Kavalayapida. All these people he fought, but no one could give him even slightest amount of fighting pleasure, even Kamsa also. Kamsa, Krishna picked up him and then threw in the wrestling mat, and then he died. Where is the fight there? So Kamsa, who defeated all these demons, could not offer sufficient fighting pleasure to Krishna. There is some pleasure in fighting also. If you are in Kshatriya mode, you will understand that. But otherwise, typically Brahmana people fighting, hey, waiting, they will just run away. But someone has that Kshatriya spirit, may not be physical fight only, they will fight with something else, fight with issues. They will get into ecstasy when some challenge comes in front of him. So, Krishna could not get sufficient fighting pleasure in all his fights with other people, demons. So he wanted to derive some fighting pleasure by fighting with Jambavan. Even to satisfy Krishna with fight, you need a devotee. That's why Jaya and Vijaya have descended as Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Shishupala, Dantavakra, so that they can fight with Krishna and give him some fighting pleasure. Because ordinary materialistic conditioned souls of this material world, although they are inimical to Krishna, they cannot give fighting pleasure to Krishna. Right? So Jambavan could not recognize. 22nd. In the 22nd verse we saw how Jambavan could not recognize Krishna because of anger, and he began to fight with Krishna. So Purusham Prakritam Matva, thinking him of a mundane person. So-called Vedic scholars, including most Western ones, enjoy translating the word Purusham as man, even when the word refers to Krishna. That way. So Krishna is Purushottama. Dvandva yuddham sutumalam ubhayor vijigishatoh ayudhasma drumair dorbhihi kravyarthe siena yor iva.
The two fight furiously in single combat, each determined to win, contending against each other with various weapons and then with stones, tree trunks, and finally their bare arms. They struggle like two hawks battling over a piece of flesh.
Hmm. So they started fighting with each other. The fight went for 28 days. And they were striking each other with fists and which fell like the cracking blows of lightning. So Krishna could not experience the Virya Rasa completely till he fought with Jambavan. So, because of the influence of Yoga Maya, Jambavan thought of Krishna as an ordinary man, and then he started fighting with him. Next, Jambavan's thinking like this is the will of Krishna, so that both can fight. But otherwise, one should not minimize the position of Jambavan. How can he fight with Krishna like that? Krishna Mushti Vinishpata Nishpishtangoru Bandhanaha Kshina Sattvaha Svinna Gatraha Tan Ahativa Vismitaha. His bulging muscles pummeled by the blows of Krishna's fists, his strength faltering and his limbs perspiring, Jambavan, greatly astonished, finally spoke to the Lord. So, for a warrior, for a fighter, for someone who has great Kshatriya spirit, this kind of exhaustion in battle gives him pleasure only. For a singer, he may sing for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and then his voice is also it's too much. He may be tired. Still, although he's tired, that gives him pleasure. After all, he's a singer. For other person, he sings for 10 minutes and then he's collapsed and he will be detached. So, different people derive pleasures in different ways. Although deriving such kind of pleasure is little troublesome for them physically, if it's exhausting also, still there is some pleasure in the mind. That's why they do that. So, then he understood. Jambavan understood. Who can stand in front of me for so long time other than Lord Ramachandra? Is this blue man Ramachandra? Then he started thinking. Then, Janaitvam Sarvabhutanam Prana Ojas Sahobalam Vishnum Purana Purusham Prabhavishnumadhishwaram. I know now that you are the life air and the sensory, mental and bodily strength of all beings. Janetvam sarva bhutanam. I am able to understand that you are the life air and everything of all living beings. Prana, oja, saha, balam. And you are Vishnum Purana Purusham. You are the original personality of Godhead. Vishnu, Prabhavishnu, Adhishwaram. You are all powerful. You are the supreme controller. So, Jambavan is a very important character in Ramayana. Although in the Sundarakanda, all the credit of searching for Mother Sita and finding Ravana, giving him a warning, setting fire to Lanka, all this is done by Hanumanji and the whole credit goes to Hanumanji. But how did Hanumanji get that credit? Because Jambavan inspired him. Jambavan reminded him of the strength. So Jambavan was almost acting like a guru of Hanuman. Because when all the monkey soldiers in Angada's party were perplexed on the shore of the ocean, how to cross this ocean? Someone will say, I will cross, I can jump 10 miles. Someone will say, I can jump 20 yojanas. Someone will say, I can jump 100 yojanas also, but I cannot come back. So like the different people were saying, and Hanumanji was also equally perplexed. He was also thinking, how to cross. Then Jambavan said, why are you thinking? You should jump. So you are this, you are that. Because of the sage's curses, you must have forgotten your prowess. You should jump. You have the ability to jump. Like that he was glorifying Hanumanji. And then Hanumanji became very big. And then he jumped across ocean. All because of Jambavan. So Jambavan was the strongest living entity at that time, but practically all the joints and limbs of his body became so reduced in strength, practically to nil. So Jambavan was quite aware of his own superhuman bodily strength, but when he felt tired, he understood that only Krishna or only Ramachandra can do this. So because Jambavan in the beginning Jambavan could not understand the fact about Krishna, because Krishna wanted that pleasure of fighting. Krishna wanted to give that pleasure of fighting to Krishna. Till Krishna is completely satisfied with the service of his devotee, he will not reveal himself. Right? Krishna revealed himself with the after Jambavan performed his service of giving the fighting pleasure to Krishna. So far Jambavan was thinking that this boy unnecessarily coming, Krishna is coming and trying to disrupt my son's enjoyment or intrude into my cave. He was having a different vision, but now he developed a totally different vision. Next, 27th verse. Tvam hi Vishvasrujam Srishta Srishtanam apayatjayat Kalah kalayatam isham Paraatma tathatmanam. Now Jambavan is offering prayers. 26th verse, the first prayer.
27th is second prayer. So, Tvam hi Vishva Srijam Srishta. You are the creator who created all the universes. And Srishtanam Abhiyat Chasat. You are the underlying substance of all creation. Sat is underlying substance, he says. You are the subduer of all subduers. Kalaha Kalayatam. Kalayaha Kalayatam. Ishaha. You are the supreme controller. Para Atma Tathatmanam. You are the supreme soul of all souls. So he is the creator of creators of universal affairs. He is the creator of material elements which the so-called creators just manipulate. This is the actual scientific understanding of Krishna. Understanding him to be the Vishva Srijam Srashta Srishtanam Apichayapi. Different people are designated as creators or discoverers of different things. But Krishna is the one who discovered them also, who created them also, and who created the ingredients for their creations. Krishna created these material elements, and these intermediate creators are coming and manipulating those material elements and claiming to be creators. 28. Yayeshadutkalitaroshakatakshamokshair Vartmadishat Kshubhitanarkatimingalabdhi Setuh krita Svayasha Ujjvalita Chalanka Rakshasi Ramsi Bhuvipeturishu Kshanati Kshatani. Read.
You are he who impelled the ocean to give way when his sidelong glances slightly manifesting his anger disturbed the crocodiles and timingala fish within the watery depths. You are he who built a great bridge to establish his fame, who burned down the city of Lanka and whose arrows severed the heads of Ravana, which then fell to the ground.
Okay. Now he identified Krishna as Ram, none other than Ram. O King, Lord Krishna then addressed the King of Bears, who had understood the truth, realized the knowledge of Bhagavan. The lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, touched Jambavan with his hand, which bestows all blessings, and spoke to his devotee with sublime compassion. His grave voice deeply resounded like a cloud. And while touching Jambavan's body, Krishna also relieved Jambavan of all pain that he only gave him with his fists. So Krishna can do anything. Krishna, apparently sometimes he may put his devotee in some trouble, but one should have complete faith that if Krishna wants, within a second he can remove this trouble from me. But still, why is he allowing me to undergo this trouble? Because I deserve this. Krishna ordained this upon me because I deserve this according to my previous actions. That is the understanding of a devotee. Right? So Krishna can relieve all sufferings. He can do anything. He can fight and just punch you for 28 continuous days, and with one touch of his hand, he can relieve you from all that suffering. Same thing. For 28 days or so many days, you may just try so hard to complete one service, and after that he will give one smile through some of his representatives, and you forget all the pain that you underwent. That's all. That is the relief. If we look forward for Krishna's satisfaction, which is seen through the satisfaction of his representatives, then all the pains of our hard work as a part of Krishna's service can be completely relieved. But if our object or our aim or our goal in doing various activities in devotional service is anything other than the satisfaction of Krishna, then
we will feel that pain more vividly. We will experience that pain more deeply. But all that pain will just vanquish within a moment if we seek the satisfaction of the Master. Is this clear? This is a simple thing. Ayatma suprasidati. The complete satisfaction of the self is possible when one has ahituki and apratihata attitude. Ahituki is no motivations, no selfish motivations. The only motivation is mukhena lokarti harasmitena parispurat kundala manditena shona yitena darabimba bhasa pratyarhayantam sunasena subhava. Krishna's only remuneration that he gives to all his devotees for all the hard work that they have done is his smile. He just smiles. Just seeing that smile means he is satisfied. I am satisfied with your service. That's what Prachitas say. My dear Lord, what benediction do we want? We want this benediction of your satisfaction. May you be satisfied with all our activities, with all our puja, path, service, ruling, following dharmic principles, varnashrama, whatever it may be, whatever we may do. In all our endeavors, we just seek your satisfaction. If you are satisfied, that is our success. That is our benediction. So the highest aspiration of a devotee is Krishna's satisfaction. Nothing else. Now Jambavan has forgot all the pains. 28 days he has been taking the punch. Krishna's punch is not a small thing. When he really wants to punch you. Right? If he wants to punch, the butter soft, rose petal like, mrudu pravala, tender leaf like hand or foot of Krishna can act like a thunderbolt on a person. So that much pain also can be relieved completely. So Krishna said, it is for this jewel, O Lord of the Bears, that we have come to your cave. I intend to use the jewel to disprove the false accusations against me. Thus addressed, Jambavan happily honored Krishna by offering him the maiden daughter Jambavati together with the jewel. You take this money, you take this kanyamani also. You take this jewel of all girls, that is Jambavati. So, now in the previous chapter, we had discussed the story of Pradyumna. And this Pradyumna story happened in connection with Jambavati. See, Pradyumna took birth from the womb of Rukmini before Krishna's marriage to Jambavati. And the other marriages of the Lord took place later. Right? So, Pradyumna was born before Krishna married Jambavati. So by that time Krishna is already a father of a child. So he is accepting a second wife now. Krishna. Read 33, translation.
After Lord Sauri had entered the cave, the people of Dwaraka who had accompanied him had waited 12 days without seeing him come out again. Finally they had given up and returned to their city in great sorrow.
So Krishna, in this, he addressed Jambavan as king of bears in the previous verse, 30th verse. The reason is, although lion is considered the king of the forest, he is not the king. Jambavan is the king. That way. That's why he is addressed as king. The Lord uses even material objects also to counteract this bad propaganda. When the Lord is trying to act as a human being, he is trying to prove his innocence. Yet, he is the supreme, self-same, supreme personality of Godhead. So, in this verse, after Lord Shauri has entered the cave, people of Dwaraka who had accompanied him waited for 12 days and finally they gave up and returned to the city in great sorrow. 12 days, no trace, why Krishna did not come out. But Krishna comes after 16 days. 12 plus 16, 28. After they left, also Krishna is still 16 days there only. Inside the house, inside the cave, fighting. So, here, there are so many miseries in this material world, but the misery of misunderstanding is more painful. You catch cold. Now I am catching cold and then feeling little feverish and all. Certainly there is a misery. But this misery is not as much misery as when someone misunderstands you, misunderstands your intentions, suspects you, questions your integrity, especially when you are not at fault. When you are at fault and when someone points you out, then one's ego might be hurt. And when you are not at fault and when someone points you out, especially if that is a beloved one, your own man, then your heart is hurt, not ego. It's not ego. Ego is hurt because of your, you want to protect your whatever image, but more than image, when especially when a loving person misunderstands you, your own man misunderstands you, then that's like emotionally you are hurt. Now here, sometimes someone may misunderstand you and he is not very dear to you also. Even then also there is a pain, because different people, one misunderstanding will lead to so many other people's misunderstanding also. Now this person misunderstood me, he will not keep quiet, right? He will express whatever he understood about me to other people. They will also misunderstand me, they will also misunderstand me. Like that, so many people will misunderstand. So that creates a deeper emotional turmoil. Just like Bharat Maharaj was suspected by whom? Except Ram, practically everyone suspected him. Dasharatha Maharaj suspected him. Then Kaikeyi, actually first misunderstanding of Bharat Maharaj was done by Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi misunderstood Bharat Maharaj that probably if I give him the kingdom, he'll be more happy. That's a misunderstanding of Bharat Maharaj's mood and intention. Bharat will be more happy to serve Lord Ram when he is the king. But Kaikeyi misunderstood him, thinking that king, he's becoming king will give him more happiness than his brother becoming the king, Ram becoming the king. So because of Kaikeyi's misunderstanding, other people misunderstood him in a different way. Dasharatha Maharaj misunderstood him. Kausalya misunderstood him. Then who else? Lakshman misunderstood him. Then Vasishtha misunderstood him. So like that, so many people misunderstood. All the Ayodhyavasis misunderstood him. All. So he suffered for some times because of all the circumstances. And Sita was misunderstood by Ayodhyavasis, especially that washerman person. And she was banished. So now, Lakshman misunderstood whom? Bharat. When Bharat was coming to Chitrakoot to meet Lord Ramachandra, and to do what? Ram, you accept the kingdom again. I will cancel, at least Kaikeyi is ready to cancel all her benedictions, all her boons. Kaikeyi's boon was, she wanted Ram to do one vas and Bharat to be the king. Then Kaikeyi, now she's ready to cancel the boons, right? No more conditions. Then Ram says she may cancel the boons, but the word that I have given to my father will not be cancelled. Right? To keep my father's word active or valid, I have accepted this one vas, I have to be here. So some people also say, I'm not sure how true it is, but it makes sense. Bharat even wanted to say that, I will accept one vas, you be the king. We'll exchange our positions. Then people said, wow, wow. But Ram said, just to get some favorable results, you can't manipulate the truth. It's not that any son of Dasarath Maharaj will do Vanavas, and any son of Dasarath Maharaj will be the king. And they can choose, choice A, B, C, D, you can choose whatever you want, according to your convenience. Not that. It's very specific. Dasarath's boon is very specific. Ram has to do 14 years of Vanavas. Bharat has to do, has to become the king. That's what Kaikeyi wanted, very specifically. You can't keep exchanging what you have to do, what you are supposed to do and what I am supposed to do are different. You can't just exchange the rules. So Ram did not accept. So Lakshman misunderstood him, and Ram was coming toward, Bharat was coming towards Chitrakuta along with all the Ayodhyavasis. Lakshman said that because of this Bharat, now you are in Vanavas, wearing this kind of simple clothes, living in huts. Just give me one order. Now he is coming here with all his army to attack you and even kill you also. We don't know his intentions. So now if you just order me, I will fight with him. Then Ram said, relax. Bharat will not even think like that, even in his mind. I trust him. Then true to Ram's expectation, Bharat Maharaj came and fell at the feet of Ram and requested him, urged him to take the kingdom. But because Lakshman misunderstood Bharat, later Sita misunderstood Lakshman. See, Lakshman did not even, cannot even think to just capture Ram's property or Ram's wife. But what did Sita say? You are having a bad intention about me. So Sita misunderstood Lakshman. So he is basically getting a reaction for misunderstanding Bharat. But Sita misunderstood Lakshman. So Sita was blamed. Sita was not accepted immediately by Ram after Vanavas. What did Lord Ram say? I cannot accept you because you stayed in someone else's house for 1 year. Then Sita had to give Agni Pariksha to prove herself. Agni came and said, Agni is pure. Agni is the sakshi for all transactions. But Agni has become more pure because of the touch of Mother Sita. She is so pure, we accept him. Lord Ram said, I wanted to declare her purity to the entire humanity. That's why I put her to this test. But I know her heart. So although one's heart is very clean, sometimes because of these external interactions and misunderstandings, people have to undergo certain things. Definitely Ram, Bharat, Lakshman, Sita Devi, they're all transcendental, the Supreme Lord's associates. But through their activities, they're giving us this message. We cannot effort to misunderstand the Supreme Lord and His devotees. We cannot imagine something and impose them on them without sufficient evidence. Satrajit had no proof that Krishna has stolen. Just pure speculation. So Bharat Maharaj also, Lakshman also, kind of misunderstood Bharat, although it was not fact. Sita misunderstood Lakshman, although not fact. So misunderstanding is basically imposition of one's imaginary thoughts and conceptions and perspectives on someone who is not actually responsible for such ideas and thoughts. That is not there in his mind, it's there in your mind. You are speculating that it is there in his mind and you are just imposing it on him. So that is not proper. If he actually said it, if you have actually seen it, then that has to be dealt in a more sensitive way, in a private forum, only with the relevant people around. So that has to be done in a very sensitive way. But unnecessarily blaming someone for something which he is not responsible for at all will only bring about this kind of experiences. So Vali misunderstood Sugriva. What did Sugriva do? He accompanied Vali to kill that demon. What is his name? There is one big demon who attacks Kishkindha. So Vali was so powerful. So they just run, and then they go inside a cave to fight with each other for a long time. So after a long time, demon is very powerful and Vali is also powerful. So same thing happened like this. Krishna entered Jambavan's cave, 28 days he didn't come out. People misunderstood. People thought that, hey, what happened? And then they left. They waited and left, and they were crying. They were concerned about Krishna only. But helplessness, because of out of helplessness, 12 days they waited and they left. Same thing happened with Sugriva. Sugriva saw Jambavan and the demon enter inside the cave, fighting, so many sounds were coming. And after some time, blood was coming. So much blood was flowing from the cave. So Sugriva kind of misunderstood that Vali must have been killed by that demon. So what did Sugriva do? Sugriva took a big boulder and blocked the entrance of the cave so that the demon cannot come out, and the demon will be suffocated within the cave only and he will die. He wanted to kill him that way. So he blocked and he came to Kishkindha. And after some time people said, hey, your brother is not coming, you just, Kishkindha is, now there is no king in Kishkindha, better you become the king. With great reluctance, just to accept the responsibility, Sugriva became the king. Meanwhile, what happened actually was, Vali was not killed by the demon, Vali killed the demon. And he came out and he saw the mountain cave blocked with a boulder. Because he is so powerful, he just kicked like this and then boulder broke, and then he came out, he came to Kishkindha, he saw Sugriva on the throne. Then Vali said, then he misunderstood. You wanted to lock me inside the cave and you wanted to sit on my throne. You are so greedy for the kingdom. You have no affection for your brother like that. Sugriva was expressing his affection. He was so happy to see Vali back, but he was so disheartened to hear his words, his misunderstanding words. Then Vali just checked out, Vali just beat, he made Kishkindha, he made Sugriva get out of Kishkindha, and he also took possession of all his wealth and also his wife, Tara. Vali's wife Tara? No, Sugriva's wife is what? What is her name? Huh? Ruma. Like that, Ruma. So Ruma also he has taken. So like that, he was checked out of Kishkindha. So he went into Rishyamukha mountain. He started sitting there. So somehow Vali had a shap, curse by some rishi. I think his name is Matanga or something. Matanga, right? Okay, Matanga, right? So because of that Matanga's curse, Vali cannot enter Rishyamukha. So that gave some protection to Sugriva. And he's staying there and Hanuman was his friend. So that is a misunderstanding episode from Ramayana. So many misunderstanding episodes. Now from Bhagavatam also we have these misunderstanding episodes. In this material world you cannot avoid misunderstanding. But how exactly do you deal with misunderstanding? That shows how mature the person is. Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have seen misunderstanding. So, the lesson is that when we are misunderstood or our intentions are suspected, definitely one can attempt to prove one's innocence, but if we fail to do so, probably we may just have to accept it as Krishna's plan for my own purification. Then just move ahead with life. That's all we can do. So, but on a personal level, one should not suspect someone else's intentions and try to respect others' integrity. Even if the other person is apparently wrong also, one needs to understand that person's activity to the best of one's understanding of the situation and try to forgive or comfort him or do the needful basically. And what is that needful depends on the time, place, circumstances. You cannot give a black and white answer to this. But the principle is we cannot avoid misunderstandings in this material world. Next, 38th verse.
when Devaki, Rukmani, Vasudev and Lord's other relatives heard that he had not come out of the cave, they all lamented. Cursing Satraji, the sorrowful residents of Dwaraka approached the Durga deity named Chandrabhaga and prayed to her for King Krishna's return. When the citizens had finished worshipping the demigoddess, she spoke to them in response, promising to grant their request. Just then Krishna, who had achieved this purpose, appeared before them in the company of his new wife, giving them joy. So, then also, he was wearing Samantaka jewel on his neck. All the people were roused with jubilation. Then Krishna summoned Satraji to the royal assembly. There in the presence of Ugrasena, Krishna announced the recovery of the jewel and then formally presented it to Satrajit. Hanging his head in great shame, when someone unnecessarily misunderstands another person, innocent person, and when it is proved in front of the whole world that my accusations were faulty, there was no truth in my imaginary accusations, he only has to feel guilty and he has to feel extreme moroseness and shame. Satyarajit was experiencing that now. He was repentant also, pondering over his grievous offense and worried about the possibility of conflict with the Lord's mighty devotees. Satyarajit thought, how can I cleanse of myself of my contamination? And how may Lord Achyuta become satisfied with me? And what can I do to regain my good fortune and avoid being cursed by the populace for being so short-sighted, miserly, foolish and avaricious? So Satrajit's repentance was quite genuine here. I shall give my daughter, the jewel of all women, to the Lord together with the Samantaka jewel. Then indeed, that indeed is the only proper way to pacify him. So Satrajit sincerely wanted to rectify his offense. And Krishna gave him the intelligence how to do it from within. Then Satrajit was inspired to give Satyabhama to Krishna. Having thus intelligently made up his mind, Satrajit personally arranged to present Krishna with his fair daughter and the Samantaka jewel. So then the whole marriage took place. The Lord married Satyabhama in proper religious fashion, possessed of excellent behavior along with beauty, broad-mindedness and all other good qualities. She had been sought by many men. Then the Lord told Satrajit, I accept your daughter, but I cannot accept your jewel. Take it back. You are the sun god's devotee, so let it stay in your possession only. Thus we will also enjoy its benefits, don't worry. So, when now Krishna is giving that Samantaka mani back to Satrajit, so he is not showing any greed for it at all. Because once you understand that this person has so much attachment, now even if he has given up that attachment, still we should acknowledge his previous attachment and give it to him. So, Krishna just gave it to him. So one can never challenge Krishna's power, however powerful one may be. Trinavarta has lost his life using his powers against Krishna. Satrajit, who possessed Samantaka jewel, which is giver of auspiciousness, and that same jewel became the cause of his death, the cause of inauspiciousness. So Krishna is so steadfast, that quality of Krishna is seen in this episode. The person who continues work until his desired goal is achieved is called steadfast. So Krishna was steadfast in this episode, in this chapter especially. So what happens later is, we have only 5-10 minutes. What happens later is, Satrajit had earlier promised to give his daughter Satyabhama to some other kings. Before this whole transaction has happened. So those people became little inimical towards Satrajit and they planned a conspiracy
Mr. Satadhanva. He comes and kills Satrajit in the middle of the night and takes away his Samantaka jewel. And at that time Krishna was in Hastinapur. What was there in Hastinapur? In Hastinapur, this Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra and other people, they just schemed and tried to kill Pandavas in that Varnavarta fire, right? So that has happened. So there was a big rumor at that time, misunderstanding, that Pandavas died. So just as a formality, Krishna and Balram also went to Hastinapur to shed tears, to participate in that lamentation of Pandavas' death, although they are quite aware that Pandavas are still living and they will manifest in front of the whole world very soon. So, but they are just acting ignorance at that time. So meanwhile, Satrajit died here. This is real. So Satyabhama preserved Satrajit's body and she went to Hastinapur to inform Krishna that your father-in-law died. Then Krishna came back and took a vow that whoever has killed your father, I will catch that fellow. I will find out where is the Samantakamani, etc., etc. Then Satadhanva came to know that Krishna took a vow to find him out. Satadhanva, what he did, he went and told Akrura, you keep this jewel with you. Just keep it with you. I am running away now. It's not safe for me to keep it with me. So he ran. Krishna chased him, and then finally caught him and killed him. But he did not find the jewel with him. Meanwhile, Akrura took the jewel and he was little doubtful and ambiguous or whatever. That's a reaction for him because of offending the gopis. So he ran away from Dwaraka. He took the Samantaka jewel and went to Kasipuri, Banaras. There he started doing so many sacrifices and then engaged different people in different works, and then he was utilizing the wealth of Samantaka jewel to conduct sacrifices and doing many other things. So he's in Banaras, in Ajnatavas. Meanwhile, in Dwaraka, there were some natural calamities. So because of all these calamities, people started thinking that because of the absence of Akrura, all these natural calamities are happening at our place. Because Akrura was the son of Svafalka and he had a benediction, or he is known for his great Svafalkane. What is that? Huh? Gadhini. So Akrura was known to have known to cause prosperity in a place wherever he lives. So, and Samantakamani is also known to have that prosperity. So Dwaraka, some of the Dwarakavasis started misunderstanding that this because of the absence of Samantakamani, because of the absence of Akrura, we are having so many natural calamities. Krishna only has done something, because of which they just left. So like that, they misunderstood Krishna again. And Krishna again endeavored to prove his innocence. So then somehow he managed to find where Akrura is, and then he brought him and then he proved his innocence. So one important message that we get from this whole episode is how familiarity breeds contempt. All the Dwarakavasis became so familiar because of staying so close to Krishna that Krishna is misunderstood by Dwarakavasis twice as the thief or someone who has stolen Samantaka jewel. So this familiarity breeds contempt is one important message from this episode. Fault finding also is like a spark which by the wind of sound vibrations turns into an inferno of blazing fire. That is the effect of fault finding. and unnecessary misunderstanding and accusation. So there are many more insights. And in this episode, especially in the second part of this episode, 57th chapter, one more quality of Krishna is being shown, that is, Krishna is so liberal. Any person who is by his natural behavior very mild is called liberal. So Krishna was kind towards Satrajit, and Krishna was kind towards Akrura, although they have done some things, mistakes. That's why he's called liberal. So we'll conclude here, 1 o'clock. Thank you all very much. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.